Chema. So, Shobindo's yoga is an all-encompassing yoga. Just like life, which does not create divisions between this or that, Shobindo's yoga also is all-encompassing. Of course, that does not mean that we just go on with life as it is going and automatically it is yoga. No, yoga is yoga. And basically it means to uplift human life and every sphere of life, every activity, every field to the highest possible pitch. So, Shobindo said life has a divine origin. Many new beautiful things. It is not an illusion. It is not Maya which has somehow cheating us and snaring us. Life's origin is divine. And here it has become limited. And there is a reason behind it. And the reason is very simple. Just as a parent, when a child is conceived, it's not just the child is a physical conception, but much more importantly, an inner conception. Parents plan the child. So what do they plan about the child? They think, they conceive what the child can possibly become. But their journey starts from the womb of darkness. The child doesn't know anything. And then it starts from kindergarten, step one, step two. And till one day the child fulfills ultimately the idea within him which seeks to express itself. So, same thing with human life. It starts in a limited way and it's important because sudden exposure to too strong a light can be disorienting. People often ask, why doesn't the divine reveal himself? Well, he is much more keen to reveal himself. That's the truth of the matter. Much, much, much more keen. The problem is, are we ready to meet the Creator? Not meet by going out of the body, that's also difficult enough. But to meet him in this body of, Shobindo used the word, in this house of flesh, can we meet him? And he will ensure that we meet him. That's the whole reason for the drama of creation. But obviously, there are several steps and stages in this preparation through cycles of Satyog, Treta, Dwapar, Kaliyug, and again, Pralayas. And individually through cycles of birth, death, rebirth, death. It's a constant preparation going on. And Shobindo says, now we have reached a very important critical phase in this evolutionary process. It's a point of great transition or a great leap. So up till now, human evolution has taken place under the influence of what we know as the gods, means different powers and aspects of the divine, but each as if himself. That's why we have so many cults, sects, religions. So all these religions and sects have helped mankind to reach a certain point. But beyond a point, they fail because they cannot integrate the immense diversity of creation and they cannot integrate worldly life with the spiritual. This is the problem. But they have done a fairly good job till now. But now one can see that it's no more helping mankind. Even if we somehow intellectually create a unity of religion, still the problem will be that almost all religions ultimately look up to the beyond. So ultimately this is material life, worldly life. And there is a salvation in some heaven, some paradise, some swarga, some Vaikuntha, somewhere, you know, there is moksha. So this is only like a preparation. Then you have to leave it and go. And it raises many questions in all sensitive seeking minds. That then why this big drama? If at the end it is a sudden abrupt finishing line. And that's where Shobindo comes to answer. That no, moksha is a step. And it's not a, this does not mean completely going into the annulment in the Supreme Consciousness. It's a step of freedom, freedom from the ignorance. That means Now we know why earthly life is here and what is our role, what is its great goal, and then participate in it consciously, joyously, and then finally become instruments for the fulfillment of the grand plan for which earth has been made. This in the nutshell is the whole yoga. That there is a purpose which is there in the heart of earth, and actually all evolution is a manifestation of the divine hidden in earth, and this is the yoga of the earth. This is another very interesting, beautiful, we use the word idea in the highest sense that Sri Aurobindo has given us, that there is a yoga going on in earth. We think we do yoga. But we ourselves are the product of this yoga going on inside earth. Why this has come out? Like, you know, we hear about sages doing the yajna, different things come out. So man has come out. So what is the role of man? You now become a catalyst, collaborate in this yoga and lead it to fulfillment. That's what man's role is. So once we know it, then life takes a different turn. In other words, there are several revolutionary changes taking place since the last, particularly one last century. This is very evident. And this revolution has taken both types, massive destructions as well as many new ideas. So on the surface, these look like political revolutions, ideological revolutions, revolutions in human thought, scientific revolutions, industrial revolution. But deep inside, it's the spiritual revolution which is taking place. Human consciousness preparing to take the next leap. If we catch this thread, we are on to the smooth road. If we don't catch this thread, then there is a great degree of restlessness and tension, stress, which is going to build up. Already there is, it's going to build up more and more. Because it's the inner something in us which wants to take a leap. And this inner something is what Sri Aurobindo has called as the psychic being. So this is the nutshell. Now if somebody has a question, otherwise Pradeep Bhai had asked me to talk a little bit about psychic being, inner being and personality, but at least we have reached this point of just an overview of the whole yoga which is going on in creation. Any questions? Yes, please. Okay. So, any questions? Anyone can ask. No problem. How to overcome inertia? There is something given to man. Okay, we'll take it up from another angle. So, you know, there is a tendency which creeps in many of us that we are dependent on something outside. So there is this word called orphan, anath. But you know, nobody is anath. Everybody has been provided by nature and divine with certain powers within us, which we have to develop. All education is about it. Unfortunately, we go through it through degrees, one degree, graduation, all this job. But deep within it is to develop certain powers which are given to us. So what are these powers which are given to us? First of all, the body itself is a power. It's a rath, vahan. We don't take care of it, but body itself, there is a will in the body itself which operates, which can throw illness. Sri Aurobindo speaks of that. But we don't develop. Why? Because we think doctor will treat us. Doctors are happy. Doctors will not tell that, you know, you can heal yourself. It's poor fellows, their shops will be shut. Okay, I hope there is no doctor here. No offense meant. I'm a doctor, so I can take responsibility for the comment. Another power which is given to us is faith. Unfortunately, we have lost it. Cynicism, doubt, largely based on our surface vision of things, especially when we see rapid changes and we get disoriented, we don't understand. So immediately Mr. Doubt steps in, and we live in an age of cynicism in a certain sense, which is very unfortunate. Whatever it is, faith is given to everyone, and this faith has nothing to do with faith in this or that. Faith in life, faith in destiny, faith in creation, it has a goal. All this wonderful magic has not come just like that. It's a conscious power driving the stars. This doesn't require reading a book. Just look at night. It's mesmerizing to see the sky. What power has set them into motion? When we read about earth wheeling around the sun with the change of seasons, it's just amazing. So there is a power, the source, and the beauty is this source, by its very nature, by default, will be within each element of creation. There cannot be too many sources, one source. So whether you call it Big Bang or any bang, doesn't matter. Nowadays they've given it up and they talk about other things. So this source dwells within us. And there is in man an intuitive faith that there is something called as divine, highest. And whatever doubts may come at the end of the day, at the end of an age, this faith returns. It is a treasure. We should guard it and we should, and one of the ways is like what kind of things we read, what kind of people we come in contact with. Faith is a treasure. There are those who throw doubts, and there are those who nurture faith. Some are inborn with it. Children are inborn with it. See, when they get injured, I have seen as a doctor even 8-year-old child having blood cancer. It was remarkable. The child was not depressed unless, you tell you are having cancer. Do you know what is going to happen? Even then, I was surprised. One of the pediatric rounds when this child, we asked him, we used to feel very sorry every day. Especially because he remained happy. And we knew what is his diagnosis. So one day very casually some of us asked him very gently, so what do the doctors say? What is your diagnosis or something? Do you know? He said, yes, I have blood cancer. End of the story. Children have it. We put it into their mind because we have so much afraid of appearances. It's intuitively. Many things are there intuitive, as an intuitive faith within us. For example, when you say about, you have to introduce yourself. We introduce, invariably our hand goes to the heart, isn't it? As if we know that here is my I, the true I. It's not in the mind. Nobody says, I am a degree holder. I am a degree holder. So, faith is another power. We need to develop it. And along with faith, there is will. Will should be cultivated. And now schools, in the name of freedom, so-called freedom, they don't understand freedom. Freedom is the ability to, freedom should be empowerment. Freedom is not let loose. So in the name of freedom, the will has been, and there is a reason why this is happening, and I'm not going into all that. But will is a power, which we don't use. Simple thing, you feel hungry. So there is a hunger, and hunger is making one restless. And general tendency is grab it. This terminology, grab it, everything must be grabbed. But supposing you don't have food instantly available, then hold it. This sayama, learning to wait. This is a very famous poem, no? They too serve who wait. So this learning to wait is something we have forgotten. So the will becomes weak more and more because it wants instant gratification. It's a big net which has been woven around our lives. We have not realized. So when will becomes weak, then it's become very difficult. So empower yourself by increasing the will. How to do it? Very simple, like any muscle. Every situation where you feel frustrated, something which you desired is not happening. So instead of making the reaction of depression, anger, irritation, just step back, wait. Delay. Nowadays they use this word emotional intelligence. It's called delaying the gratification. Even if you have the rasgulla which you loved in your thali, don't rush to eat it. That's why many of the things which were inbuilt within culture were very beautiful. I am talking about the Indian culture that I have grown up with. Recently this happened in Australia. Somebody was saying, but women have been oppressed in India. So I said, why do you say so? I agree that this is true. Women have been oppressed everywhere. I agree to that. But why you say so? And she said, well, because not Indian. She was an Iranian lady. Well-meaning. So she said, no, what is this practice that women have to eat in the end? I said, ask the woman whether she feels oppressed or she feels glad about it. I said, I have seen my own mother and they would never, you know, after cooking the meal, will be the first to eat. I said, they will never do it. Do you understand why they don't do it? They take it as an honor and a privilege. And if the guest needs something, they want to eat, the guest to eat the hot, ready meal. And they'll be the last. So I said, that's why they developed such a great forbearance that they could give rise to a woman like Sita who never breaks down. I mean, what a power. She never breaks down. Doesn't get embittered despite everything. Because you learn how to wait. So one of the habits practice was in Indian Air Force, we had this ladies first. How much I was senior officer, maybe. Srinivas, you must be knowing. Ladies first. So we used to say, oh God, we are hungry, but we have to wait. So we used to go and tell, ma'am, please. Now these simple things like when a person comes at home, guest, you give to the guest. So what is all this? It's about learning to delay our own gratification. And I am connecting this to a very profound spiritual truth. So the Gita says in one of the verses, if you read the verse superficially, it appears very strange. It says, a person when he does yajna, life is a yajna, now not going into what yajna is about, but he says, he is a real yogin who eats the leftover from everyone. Leftover. So if you read it, it will appear that people should do jutta and you know what kind of, what is this Gita is saying? No. Leftover. He says, he is not rushing into this go-get culture. So he must learn that divine will provide for me what I need. So strengthening the will is so important. And that is something which is missing for various reasons. We need not go into the reason why it is missing, but we can develop it. So at every opportunity, current goes away. Not to get frustrated. Something which we like doesn't happen. It's okay. Learn to wait. And if you have faith, then they both help each other, faith and will. If you have faith, then you will learn to wait. So they go together. And if you have a strong will, augments faith, because you end up, they are like two wings of one plane. So in fact, Shivinda says, if you have faith and will, you will go through everything. Whole yoga in the end boils down to faith and will, persisting against every odd. So just develop the will, and so many things every day we will get, so many opportunities. There are other powers also, but I have not spoken of that. Intellect is a power. Buddhi. But we have lent it to all kinds of superficial things. So that too needs to be conserved. Turned upward as the Gita says. And of course the greatest power within is the soul. So, any other question?
I think you move on.
Huh? Move on. Yeah, that's why. So any other... Okay, so psychic being, I'll talk a little about that. So this is now common psychology, that what we consciously experience or know as ourself is a very small fragment of so much more which is hidden. Is everybody now speaks to about it. And it's not difficult to understand it. We are often surprised by ourselves. People often say, how could I say this? How could I do this? Later on we say, no, sometimes that, Ari, why did I do this? So there is a very large existence which is behind this front piece. Front piece is always painted good, good guy. So what is this front piece? It is called in yoga as our surface personality. Surface personality is partly what we project to others, unfortunately. Surface personality is that which has been formed by our outer play of world forces, which includes parents' influence, heredity, all these things, immediate environment. This forms certain habits, tendencies, and we call it, this is me and myself. And if this were all, then life would be hopeless, almost for everyone. So, but behind this surface personality, there is a much more larger existence. Why it is called larger? Because surface personality is very limited to immediate situations, people, things. But there is a larger personality which is communicates with the universe. After all, this is a very interesting question, which at least I used to raise. Why each one's nature is different? Now we use the word karma, but it doesn't really explain what is the process. Because nature is one. Ultimately, if you really go into spiritual understanding, there is universal nature. And it is also true that each one of us contains little bit of everything that is in others. Only the combination is different, which makes different ice cream flavors. That's all. There is nothing which is there in one person which is not there in anybody else. So how is this that the individual nature comes into play? So there is the universal movement of nature, and something within us sort of ties a knot and only a little bit of picked up. That is the projected part. But behind the knot also, it is a larger existence. And if the knot opens up, what that knot is the knot of the ego. And behind the ego self, there is a larger, much more fluid existence receiving from all over the universe. You go to a market, you are passing by and you have the desire to buy something. One person gets an illness and you get the fear catches you. And beautiful things also. That's how satsang operates. So there is a larger universal existence. So behind our outer mind, that means what we normally think, there is an inner mind, and this inner mind can receive thoughts from above, from around, from people, from prevalent things going around. It just has to tune the antenna. And behind our surface emotions, there is a deeper emotion. And you'll see how children absorb it from all around. You don't know from where they have picked it up. But there is the inner being in which the, because their ego is not fully formed, so they are much more vulnerable to picking up all kinds of things from the world around. So there is an inner emotional world which picks up from the world of feelings, domain of feelings which are circulating all over in the world, all kinds of feelings. And there is the inner life energy behind the surface life energy, and that also receives currents from all around. And that's why in yoga, one of the things advised is be careful of your company, because when you meet people, and especially in a very closed, intimate interchange, you exchange. There are energy transactions. It's not just about physical meeting. You begin to get molded or influenced, vice versa. This was the idea behind, originally behind the monastic order and all this, where people wanted to safeguard. Of course, there is a better way, but just to. And similarly, behind our outer physical existence, there is an inner physical. But all this remains dormant. It is active, but never, it hardly Because if the ego knot is very strong, the inner being will receive many things, but nothing comes to the surface. That's how it happens with most of the people. That's why sometimes people wonder, oh, such and such person, he is living, let's say, in the ashram for a long time. Why doesn't he change? Because you are looking for the change in the wrong place. Surface personality is the last to change. But where is the change going on in the inner being? If you ask, the person will tell you, I used to think like this, now my thoughts have shifted. But it will not show up in the outer behavior. So there is an inner being which is constantly undergoing flux, in a state of flux, being shaped. And the beauty of this inner being is, it is deep within, if you go, it is connected with the true self within us, the psychic being. So psychic being is our true identity. It is a portion of the divine within us. And now if you take a from within outward view, then the psychic being is the true self within us, individual self, because this word self is used in many ways. So, and then from there you can see that there are pure streams of nature. If you go close to it, you'll see sattva in its purity, rajas in its purity, tamoguna even in its purity. That's how Shivindo describes the triple soul force. Like if you want Ganga, if you take a dip in the Ganga in Varanasi, now I think, I hope so, it has been cleaned, I don't know. I've yet to see. Or Ganga Sagar, definitely it'll be dirty. You'll say, this is Ganga. You go to Haridwar, a better Ganga. If you go to Gomukh, yes, yes, yes. So this is how, from this point, origin, there is a beautiful energies which are coming out. This is the source of many of our, you know, godlike impulses. Spirit of sacrifice, sympathy, love that is ready to wait forever. All these, you know, intuitive sense of the divine. All this emerge from this. Compassion, which leans upon earth, which wants to help. Strength, which is ready to stand for truth, regardless of what, you know, it may, whatever challenges it may get. All these things come from the depth of the soul. And then outwardly, as it enters into the universal current, it gets mixed. So inner being is a place where soul currents, cosmic currents, currents from above, currents from the subconscious are all mixing. Churning is going on. And through that, the inner being is being formed. For developed human beings, when the soul has developed fully, near its fulfillment, the inner being also is very developed. It's very individualized. But ordinarily, it is at the mercy of world forces. And then the outer. So then what is this soul? Where does it come from? So we can, when we look at this, you know, origin of the play. So the show starts with that great utterance. One is, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. This saying has very deep ramification. But let's use our own terminology. It's easier to connect. But this light idea has a very interesting facet, because all creation has these two elements. One is what we call as matter as we know it, and the other is light particles. And if you understand light particles, then one understands why he speaks about light. Light has its own divine origin. So, what did God say? Eko ham bahushyam. One wants to become many. Like parents wants to multiply in their children. Why do they want to have children? If you ask them, aren't you happy with yourself? Maybe most will say, yes, we are not happy, we want a child to make. But most of them will say, we are happy. So why do you want the child? Child will augment the joy. So this delight of the divine wants to multiply itself. So for that, the whole cosmic play begins. Space and time come into existence. So there should be a stage, and the stage has to be as wide as divine is infinite. So stage is boundless. It cannot be infinite, but it's boundless. Space keeps expanding. And what is time? Space is the divine extending himself. He can go on extending. Till he wants, wills to collapse, it can go on extending. So it is the static extension of the divine. And what is time? Time is the dynamic impulsion. The divine sending pulsations. And with each pulsation, creation begins to happen. That's why Kala is called as the great power. Kal ke adhin hai sab. Divine is called as Mahakal, because that is the impulsion. That impulsion is contains within it everything. That impulsion is as a vibration, Om. Now, all the cosmic powers understand what this impulsion means. And all the gods obey that impulsion and all creation begins to. So this is how the stage starts, and there are many actors who come into the play. They are setting the stage. That's a long story. But we come back to psychic being. Now in this stage, he has to become many. So first within himself, several seeds, many points of light, if you want to put it, they emerge within the one. And then these seeds are cast forth into creation. Initially, they are lost in all this cosmic time, space, gods, titans, darkness, light. They are buried. But they are God's seeds. They are indestructible. So whatever may happen, they don't get destroyed. Forms get destroyed. Everything changes. But they grow through it. They grow from life to life. From birth to birth. Shubhendu describes in Savitri. Passenger from life to life, from birth to birth. Regards the icon growing by its gaze. So, as this grows inside, it becomes stronger, that little divine element. As it becomes stronger, it starts putting an influence upon nature more and more. It's like a baby can only cry, it's dependent on parents. After 2, it begins to assert itself. After 12, he says, "Look, Dad." And Dad knows, I don't need to say more. "Mama, you're sweet and everything is fine. But," and Mama understands, okay, baby has grown up. At 20, 25, the child has to enter into his own adventure. That's how the psychic being grows. Initially, it's a small spark, completely submerged by nature, wherever nature carries it, though it's the divine element. But nature is all kinds of experiences it gives. It takes it to the dungeon, to the den of evil, all kinds of places. Because nature doesn't look at it like good and bad. You'll ask why nature is taking to exposure to evil. Ask in filmmaker's story, why is the hero first shown as the son of a dawn? He is not the son of a dawn, but somehow the dawn has picked him up. And he grows up to be a big dawn till one day he realizes, oh, he is a bad guy, my real parent. No, these are stories, but something like you grow strong, capable. You have to tomorrow fight these forces. How will you fight if you have never experienced what they mean? That's why Shurubindu went to England. Sorry, this is my own interpretation. That he understood what the British mind thinks like. So when he came, he was fully aware of how the Brits think. That was one of the great powers. So that's why he tells, you know, he knew how they will give freedom. And if you, what kind of game they are prone to play. And he says, they will make you appear as if they are rendering justice. Because they are very careful about, you know, people telling them, look, look, you have done like this. It'll appear like rendering justice. So all these things he was well aware, and if you read, that's a different. So we first become aware, and when we go through the dark phase of evolution, we grow stronger. Because after each life, we are a little wiser, little stronger. And then slowly, a time comes when now we must taste the light. So that's, there are two phases of human evolution. One, when it is largely under the influence of darkness. Asuri Sampada. That's how it is. Asura. So what is the characteristic of Asura? I'll take head on anything in the world. The Asuras have gone all the way to Kailash and said, I'll fight you. All said and done, it's a stupid act, but look at the fellow's temerity. He is going and... But that's the phase of evolution, when we believe that we can take on the Creator. It's an initially, you feel there is nobody who can help me, no God. Yeah, I'll just come to it, just 5 minutes. So you feel that there is no God. So that is the phase of evolution. When there is no God, then what do? You fall back upon your own resources. So you see, Asuras are like that. Typically, that's something which I used to say, that you know, if you watch Indian movie and a typical Hollywood movie, so you'll see the difference. In Hollywood movie, when the ship is sinking, what will the hero do? He'll fight till the end, putting all of himself. In India, when the ship is sinking, the Hindu will start praying, the Muslim will start doing namaz, and everybody is praying, God come and help. Now you see, this is the challenge. Even atheism does its service. Who is atheist? Shobhinda says, God concealing himself. It's like parents telling a child, no, you manage it on your own. So there is the first phase. Then the second phase, after you are ready, now the gods come into play. You say, okay, now you are ready. You have become strong and little bit wiser. Now we want to develop beautiful qualities inside you, divine. Now I say, I don't want anything divine. I am fine. I am a strong man. I am capable of everything. I don't need a god. Initially, the rebel, revolting phase. And then finally, because God has his ways, first he comes as Pashupati, Shiva, driver of the herds. So, you know, Asuras succumb. They end up, yes, there is a God. Then he comes as Gopal. He ensnares with his sweetness. Even the worst Asura begins to feel it's better to die at this fellow's hands than to, you know, resist. He's so charming. So in the second phase of evolution, Shri Krishna explains this in the Gita in chapter 16, we begin to develop certain beautiful, heavenly, divine-like qualities. And then when we are nourished by both, then we are ready for ekoham bahushyam, that grow into that divine. So when we are growing into God-like qualities, then we hate the Asuras. Just like when in Asuric phase of evolution, you hate the gods, you don't believe in. But in the Deva evolution, you don't like, because that's a stage. But then the divine is beyond good and evil. You reach that point, then you see both are instruments of one divine purpose. In Kurukshetra, outwardly Krishna is this side, but Krishna is everywhere on every side, within every heart. So this is the journey of the psychic being, starting from ignorance, going through relative shades of grey, towards greater and greater increase in the degree of light, till one day it arrives at that completeness where a step and all is sky and God. So this is the journey of the psychic being. After that, it is free. It has realized its freedom. It has discovered that, well, me and my father are one, to use the biblical phrase. Then it has a choice, either to dissolve or to help mankind on earth like great masters, or to incarnate one of the gods it is capable of supporting, like you have Arjun, Indra acts through Arjun. It can do that. Bhima, Pavan, Putra, you know, you can do that also. Or now the new option, that window was closed till now, participate in the yoga of transformation. That option was not there. Window was there, but it was like khidki band hai. Window is closed. So many of these souls who are free will more and more now engage into this. This is the journey. Yes, you had a question.
I have a very limited question. It comes to my mind always.
Yeah.
You know, then when the Kal Chakra is common across the board for everybody.
Yes.
Divine bliss is also there. It is also common.
Yes.
See, we are all...
Absolutely.
Yeah. He has a common.
Yeah. In everyone, without Bhedbhav, yes.
Then how do we have an asura like me and a kindly person like you guys?
No, so that part, not you and me.
So this is not today.
No, I understand. I understand. So we can understand it first on the basis of the evolutionary scale. Shobindo describes 10 types of evolutionary scale. Asura is not the lowest. This is the Rakshasa, the Pishacha. And Asura is not jumps to Deva. There is the Pramatha. And there is mental Asura. And then there are, different category of Devas. And then finally we have the divine. So this gradation is necessary because it's like from kindergarten. So each soul is in different stages of evolution. Let's put it like that. This one simple way to understand it. Which means every Deva today was an Asura. We don't use Deva, Asura type of being. So let's not put it like that. But every saint had a past. Past means he was the same. And every sinner has a future. Because of this evolutionary dhara stream which is running behind our outer life. That is the beauty of creation. So if we look at it cross-sectionally at one point of time, we don't understand. But if you look at it longitudinally, then we will see. And they are this put across in so many stories like Hiranyakashipu giving birth to Prahlad. So even Shri Krishna being born in the Karavas of Krishna. They are beautiful stories. And of course, they are story of frank conversion of Asura. So basically, now I am not talking of Asura. Asura means as type of being, but the Asuric influence upon man. So in the beginning, it is important for man to start his journey. He starts his journey as an Asura. And a time comes when he gets converted towards something higher. And that moment, the divine knows. It can come to in the most unusual places. It's not like divine says, okay, now I want to convert you. Come to this particular ashram. On this day I'll give diksha. These are all human methods. Divine doesn't act like that. If you read the story of Saul of Tarsus, he is persecuting the Christians. And he's on the battlefield fallen. And Christ comes and tells him, will you take water? He says, why you are there? He says, my nature to be compassionate. If you see our own story of Jagai and Madhai, they are chasing away everybody. Devotees of Chaitanya, they are hitting with stones. A drunkard fellow. And they became such converts. Angulimal. So, this conversion, when it will take place? This is a real conversion. Not the outer conversion is a totally falsehood. But the real conversion is conversion of the Asura in man towards something of the divine. The reverse also takes place, but that's a rare phenomena, fortunately. Though Sri Krishna describes it, that's because you have not completed that evolution. So, we see how Ravan falls. Karna falls. Political is a different field. Yes, I agree. So, but the point is that from a deeper perspective, it is a constant evolutionary journey, forward movement, which is something very beautiful. Gives all of us hope that however fallen one may be, there is hope for everybody. That's the beauty. There is nothing like eternal damnation. We are all safe. There is a very nice line. It's one of my favorites. I keep quoting in Ramcharit Manas. Tulsidas, he writes about that. That Ramasu Swami Kusevak Moso. If we look at our own self, there is no hope. But if you look at your grace, there is hope, abundant hope. So, and as you said, that's because the divine grace is constantly running with us. Now, this last bit, why don't we then radically change? One is the grace reveals itself based on how much we are ready for it. It's like no parent will, only a foolish parent, some parents do that. To a four-year-old, they will buy a aircraft. Whom I am referring to, but it's a foolish act to do. Even if you are a king, send the child to Gurukul. That was the whole idea. You learn the lesson of humility, facing life challenges. So the divine, though he has bequeathed all his wealth for us, he doesn't do it like that, you are my child and I'll give you everything. No. sometimes or many times he will say, sorry, find it yourself. And people even get angry, but doesn't matter, you revolt. It's like a mama training the child through all the challenges. But then a time comes when you have finished that part. Then he says, okay, now, much more commonly, the response begins to come. It's not that divine was absent or he was segregating. The third is also, there is something called as, you know, relation between man and the divine is a two-way process. So, there is a certain degree of freedom of choice. There is no absolute freedom. But there is a certain degree of, we have an illusion of freedom of choice, so fair enough. So, we can open the door or close the door from our side. So, that's what is typified in the story of Vali and Sugriv, also in Ravana, that there is a chance given to everyone. So, with Vali asked this question, same thing. He says, you are supposed to be Samadarsi, equal-minded. You are supposed to be Dharam, you are, you know, respecting Dharma and establishing. Then, may vary Sugriv Piyara. Why have you favored Sugriv and why have you killed me? And then Rama explains that, look, you took the path of a Dharma and Sugriv extended a hand of friendship. You could have had that option that I'll take the path of Dharma and I extend the hand of friendship. But you were too arrogant. You thought nobody can do anything to me. So at some point, hubris meets, you know, so that's how the whole story goes. So there are several ways of understanding it. But most important is, as you said about today's time or any time, however dark the appearances, and is going to be light. There is a very beautiful passage in Savitri. Shivindu describes about death. And then he says, all here is a magic of contraries. Darkness is the self-chosen habitat of light. Light has hidden itself. And then he says, other is the mystery of its contrary face. Speaking about death. Although death walks beside our life, a dim bystander at the body start. And at the end, if you see, it looks like it is raised over. Says, other is the mystery. Death is a stumbling stride the soul must take. What is that stride, stumbling stride? To discover its immortality. Night is not our beginning nor our end. She is the dark mother in whose womb we have hid from too swift an awakening to world pain. That challenge is too much. But we come to her from light. By light we live and to the light we go. So this is the thing we must constantly remember. That however dark, this is a poem of Sri Aurobindo, who there also he says, it is he in the sun who is ageless and deathless, and into the midnight his shadow is thrown. When darkness was dense and covered with darkness, he was seated within it immense and alone. These lines are right. You can remember the Rig Veda, the Aprakritim Salilam, where darkness is dense. But who is hidden inside it? Inside it is divine. So divine is everywhere, including us in creation. Therefore, there is hope. However much we may go, all Savitri is about that. It gives hope to individual, to collectivity, to everyone. Darkness, death are passages, not the beginning or end of things. Sri Aurobindo also writes, hell is a shortcut to heaven's gates. He saw in destruction creation's hasty pace. So what you see sometimes today, Shiva's thunder. All the values are destroyed. So there is chaos. He saw, because new values are going to come, which are going to be much higher. But that's a different description altogether. He saw in destruction creation's hasty pace. And he found the key of change. Where? In the darkness that is slumbering. And death as a cellar of the house of life. It's a house of life in which death is only a small little room through which we pass. And hell as a shortcut to heaven's gates. Bumpy road, tunnel, duck through emergency, all these terms should be in the use. Everybody has to go through it, but it's never the end.
Nothing. What can we do to make our psychic being more active in this?
Psychic being needs psychic food. Very simply. For the mind, the food is all kinds of books, scriptures, that's good food. Formula food is, you know, all the WhatsApp information and scholarly textbooks. Mind, anyways, through all this, mental food. Emotional food, again, emotions need emotional food. So they look for a little bit of love here, little bit of love there. And at the end they see how much love I have got, little bit. So it, you know, so vital prana energy also needs vital food. Desire, enjoyment through this or that object. And body needs physical food. But psychic needs psychic food, which is the divine. So anything which gives the psychic the sense of the divine helps it to grow. Satsang is one of the beautiful means. And
sense of divinity or divine is experienced in every step.
Yes, so that's why
they go through or bring out.
Absolutely. Also, before, we often think of divine as God to whom I must, my personal God. Now that's okay, that can come like that. But the psychic detects the divinity in terms of truth, beauty and good. These are the three things which are food for the psychic. It nourishes itself on truth. Courage and love, they are the shining armors of truth. Only a courageous person can, you know, follow the path of truth. That's why we see in Satyakam Jabali's story in the Chandogya that, you know, Jabali say, I don't know who my dad is because my mom was working in so many people's places. But my mom is this lady who served as a maid. And the Rishi Gautam says, she must be a very high lady to tell you so courageously. So you see, truth is so important. And to start with, to be true to oneself. We're not like keep on talking to people. But one must be able to recognize, see in oneself what's going on. Not deceive. So one of the things that in college we used to learn, be mental honesty. Being honest to oneself. So truth. The second is good. This will to do harm, to, you know, hurt deliberately. So, Lok Sangrahart is the reason why Shri Krishna says. But where does this will to hurt and injure, harm comes from? From selfish desires. So, wherever the psychic sees a movement which is good, what is good for someone in terms of its growth, progress, the psychic is very happy. And beauty. A beautiful gesture, beautiful thought, beautiful feeling, and the psychic nourishes on that. And all this was there, part of the Indian tradition. Beauty was so much emphasized. Beauty of thought, beauty of speech, that's one thing which is totally gone. It is done, one of the worst damages that has been done to the world is by making people, children, believe that slang and abuses are the cool thing. Because speech is directly connected to the higher worlds. Very directly. That's why speech can be lifted to become a mantra. Mantra is speech lifted to highest intensities. One of the most degrading thing is that to say that, well, it's cool to be like that. But anyways, all this will pass away. But yes, truth, good and beauty are the food for the soul. Directly the divine, whatever represents to it the divine. Love, bhakti, adoration, surrender to the divine is what makes the psyche grow the most fastest. company of God lovers. Shivindu used the word. Psychic has the need for that. Yeah.
It's not the Western psychic.
No, no.
Mostly people get mistaken.
That's psycho. Change the E. Yeah, the word psyche is used in all kinds of sense. But I'm talking of Sri Aurobindo's use. It comes from the original Greek, which actually meant psyche, meant the soul. That's how many words like psychosomatic came. Later on, it got distorted. So now it went to mind and inner being, all kinds of things. But Sri Aurobindo uses it in its original sense. Psyche, psychic being, the soul in man.
The Greek meaning was there?
God. No, it meant soul, psyche. Soul. Yeah. But they didn't use the word psychic being. That is original of the mother. And then Sri Aurobindo has also taken that same. Okay, so I think we'll move. Most welcome, if ever any questions. Now I have one website where you can just mail askalogda@gmail.com .org askalogda.org, where you can directly post a question. Otherwise, it's a mail also, askalogda@gmail.com. Most welcome, because obviously there may be many things which may come up later on. So please feel free to ask.
I asked you to speak about the psychic being, because I'm going to talk to all our friends tomorrow morning.
Okay.
So I said you threw the door open.
So now that's
yeah.
Wide door is open. Okay. Thank you so much, Jema.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.